Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to the Preacher Boys Podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Preacher Boys Podcast. I really appreciate you tuning in to today's episode. And I think it's frankly one that's very important in general, as it's going to encourage many people who may resonate with the story being covered. But I also really feel personally attached to this story because it's something that has been in the background, something I've been working on for the last couple of years. And it's just a meaningful story. I've gotten to know the woman featured in this episode very well over the last 3 years and 3 months since we had our initial conversation. And I hope that those of you who are listening to this will really hear from her perspective what she experienced and the abuses that she experienced, but also that you'll understand the strength and the courage and the life that's been able to have been built in spite of these things. For those of you tuning in who may or may not be aware, on March 13th, which was a Wednesday, right after the evening service, North Valley Baptist Church in Santa Clara, California, shut off the live stream immediately after the final prayer from the service. But that was not the end of the service itself. After the live stream was off, Jack Treiber and his staff informed the church body that they had settled a lawsuit for an undisclosed amount. The lawsuit in question is something I reported on recently. You can see a link to that in the show notes of this episode or somewhere around this video if you're watching on YouTube. And that lawsuit was filed on October 19th, 2022 by two women, Christina Cheatham and Kim Craig, against North Valley Baptist Church and former youth pastor and Jack Treiber's brother-in-law, Mike Strofe. This lawsuit alleged abuse that took place near the end of the 1980s. Fred Sly, the business manager for North Valley Baptist Church, read a statement from the pulpit saying that police were called 34 years ago and it was dealt with, and that they needed to settle the lawsuit. Treiber and staff also allegedly communicated to the church that if they did not settle, they could have bankrupted the church or at least put the church in major financial debt and had to have sold at least one property. And of course, at the end of this statement, the congregation was encouraged not to listen to rumors. Now, I've been following this specific case since almost the beginning of Preacher Boys. I think I mentioned at the top of the episode, it was December 9th, 2020, when I first became involved in this. I did a full interview with Christina Cheatham, who is, of course, one of the plaintiffs in the case. And if you're sitting there going, hey, I've listened to the show since 2020, I've never heard it, it's because this episode was never actually released. See, what happened was at the time of our recording, Christina was unsure of what avenues could be taken to pursue justice in her case, considering it was something that happened near the end of the 1980s, and knowing that statute of limitations is a big roadblock for many with stories like Christina's, she was pretty sure there wasn't anything she could do at this point. We mutually agreed to put the podcast release on hold while Christina searched for ways to pursue justice. Well, Christina did discover that in 2019, a California Assembly bill had amended the law pertaining to civil suits for recovery of damages from alleged childhood sexual abuse. Again, I'll link to more information regarding that specific law, but long story short, it opened the door for Christina to be able to file a lawsuit. And up until today, Christina has not made any public statement or let out any public information regarding her perspective and her story of grooming and abuse. I'll definitely be sitting down with Christina soon to record a brand new version of the podcast episode that we originally did over 3 years ago. But in the meantime, with her permission, I'm going back to our 2020 conversation to pull some key clips that will add her voice back into the narrative surrounding this story. Now, before we start getting into the details of the case, I wanted to share this clip from that conversation that explains why Christina felt it was so important to share her story publicly now.
The reason why I'm telling my story, I guess, is because every time something happens with another victim, my story somehow gets brought up.
Right.
And it's the weirdest thing. It was my daughter's graduation party, which was 2 years ago. And I believe that's when Sarah Jackson's story came out. So I'm having her party here, and we have about at least 50 people at my house, and mostly church people. We go to church out here. And I came inside to grab something. It was a really nice day. So half of the people are outside. And then there was a group of women sitting at my kitchen table.
Right.
And I came in to grab something, and they're like, "Hey, Christina, come here." And one of the ladies said, "Do you know Cameron Giovanelli? Like, do you know this guy?" And I said, "Well, I know of him." And I said, "Because I went to school with his wife's sister." People forget, like, I've been gone from North Valley for a long time.
Right.
So they're like, "Do you know him?" And I'm like, "No." And they're like, "Well, this girl, Sarah, just came out with this story about him." And I was like, "Oh." And they're like, "And didn't something happen there before with the youth pastor?" Hmm. And there's two girls, and one girl got pregnant. And I'm like, "Oh yeah." I'm one of the girls, you know.
Yeah.
And my heart is like beating, and they're going on and on about details, and I'm like, how the heck, like, they know the details, but they're looking right at me, and they have no idea.
Right.
That me. And I'm at this point, I still hadn't told any of my kids. Like, all my kids are adults now, you know, and Cassie was just graduating from high school. So it scared me half to death, because I'm like, every time a story, it gets brought up and it gets closer and closer, and there's details, and I'm like, how the heck do they know these details?
Yeah.
And then I was like, so that night, my daughter, who was married, and I ended up telling her, because I'm like, "Charity, I have to tell you something." And then they were great. I ended up telling all three of my kids. I didn't tell Cassie because she was just graduating high school. She had a lot going on. So I'm like, I'm just going to wait on her.
Right.
And I waited like another year. But then again, every time something would come out, I'm like, it's going to come out. And my pastor's wife was another one. Like, she brought up something, and she brought up the story, and she's like, "Yeah. And, the youth pastor, and I heard that, they kissed in the sports closet under the stairs." And I'm like, "Oh," and my heart again is dream. Like, how does she know? And I'll tell you later, but like, those details, I'm like, how? There's no way they should know those details. That
right.
was, those details were told in a meeting, like a private meeting and stuff. And,
right.
So that's one of the reasons I'm coming out, because if the story gets brought up every time, sadly, a victim comes out.
And
then our story's brought up.
I'm honestly really glad that Christina has decided to share her story. And as I've said, I think it's going to be incredibly helpful to people who unfortunately resonate with Christina's perspective in this story. But I also think for people who've analyzed places like North Valley and leaders like Jack Treber and Mike Strofe, this is going to shed an unprecedented light on how those systems operate and how abuse can go on undetected, or even worse, ignored for so long. Now that we've kind of established what this conversation will be about, let's go back to when Christina was introduced to North Valley Baptist Church.
My parents started going to North Valley in 1976, so I was around 5 years old. My parents were first-generation Christians, if you want to call it that. My dad's side of the family and my mom's side of the family are both Catholic, so they were both the first, you know, Christians. And they were going to a small church before that. I believe my parents became Christians when I was around 1 year old. And then they went to a smaller church, and then they went to North Valley around 76. So Pastor Treber, I think, got there 74, 75. So they were there pretty much from the beginning when Pastor Treber got there.
In our conversation, Christina really gave this perspective that she loved the church and was heavily involved in both the school aspect and the church aspect. Her family was incredibly faithful to the ministry. For all intents and purposes, she was a really great kid. But when a new youth pastor by the name of Mike Strofe came onto the scene, he started treating her like she was one of the rebellious kids.
In between my sophomore year, I guess, and going into my junior year, is when I remember getting in trouble. Like, I felt like he called me in his office and I was in trouble. And just for a silly thing, my parents went out of town. And, I don't know, this is why it's just funny, 'cause I remember this the first time getting told, "You're so rebellious." And I sat in the balcony, which we weren't allowed to do. Like, the team leaders, you got to sit in the front couple rows or with your parents. And so my parents weren't there. And so I sat in the balcony with another adult, one of my friends, my mom's friend. And I remember him just like, "You need to come in my office right now." And I was like, "Why?" You know, I did have a little bit of attitude. And he's like, "You know, you're not supposed to be sitting in the balcony." And I was like, "But I was sitting with an adult. It wasn't like I was sitting up there." And I remember him saying, "I'm not even going to talk to you." He's like, "You're so rebellious." And he like walked out of the office, you know. And I remember calling my mom, or when she called me, I said, "Mom, Strobe's mad at me. He called me in his office." And she's like, "Why?" And I'm like, "Because I sat in the balcony. But I sat with so-and-so." And she's like, "Oh, okay." And I'm like, "He's just mad because I sat up there and it wasn't allowed. He said he was going to call you, you know." So she was like, "Okay, don't worry about it." Because I was sitting with another adult. It wasn't like I was sitting with kids just up there rebelling. So I remember that distinctly. Like, he was like, "You're rebellious." And then I remember another time in school, he called me in his office and he said, "There's two girls that I've been talking to, and they told me that you're a bad influence on them." Mind you, this is a Christian school. The worst thing I've ever did was listen to the Beach Boys. Like, and I did get demerits a lot for talking, but that was, so I was like shocked. And I'm like, "Well, who are they?" And he's like, "I told them that they need to approach you and tell you. And if they haven't come up to you in a week, you know, come back." And so obviously a week went by. There was no girls that came up to me and said, "You're a bad influence on me." And why would they? Like, that's just weird. Like, so I went back in his office. I said, "Well, nobody came up to me in this week. No girls have come up and said, 'You're a bad influence.'" And I think I was like a sophomore, you know. And so he called the girls in to tell me. And one of them was my cousin. And I'm like, "I can't believe you're telling him I'm a bad influence." My cousin, my own cousin. And then there was another girl, and she was a friend. And she was actually older than me. So I'm like, "Okay, I'm a sophomore. You're a junior, senior." She might even have been a senior. And I'm like, "What?" They were both crying because they felt horrible.
Right.
And I felt like they were being forced to. I think he was trying to discipline them and kind of like, "Why are you acting like this? Who's influencing you?" And I don't know. Then they just said my name. I don't know. Looking back. And I asked that one girl too. I'm like, "Do you remember?" And she didn't remember. She goes, "Christina, I can't believe." She goes, "That probably did happen." And she's like, "But I mean, he did, I don't know. It's appropriate. I won't tell you her name, but like, he would make her go in his office every week. Like, on every Tuesday," she goes, "Christina, every Tuesday I would go in his office. I would have to weigh myself. And he would lecture me because I was overweight. And no man is going to like want to be married to someone that's overweight." And she's right. Like, "And I still deal with that because of that, or weight or whatever." So. Yeah, when you hear stories like this, you're just like, "What in the world?" But yeah, so that's my first beginning relationship with him, was because I felt like I was always in trouble.
The constant, stern, and oppressive approach by Mike Strofe really affected Christina's personality at a young age. She started becoming what she describes as a people pleaser who was willing to do anything to keep her authority figures happy.
You end up wanting to please them because obviously I've never been in trouble. My whole elementary, you know, I was never in trouble with any teachers or anything. And so then you start like, now I'm getting in trouble. Okay, maybe it is me. And then you just start like, okay, what do you want me to do? No. Like, I don't want to be, this isn't, I don't want to embarrass my parents. This isn't who I am. So, okay, I need to change. I guess I am rebellious. I need to change something. So then you just change from not even rebellious, but feeling that, making, being made felt that way to, okay, whatever you want me to do, right. I'll do.
Yeah. Because you're seeking the approval that you're not right. getting. Right.
And then you become a pleaser, a people pleaser.
Right.
And that's when it switched for me. I was like, okay, I don't like being called in here, getting in trouble all the time. So
I mean, obviously I'm curious to know like when the first time is you felt that he stepped out of bounds, like specifically. I mean, obviously, you know, over some of these minor things, like, you know, you can say like, oh, maybe stepping in too strongly as an authority figure. But as far as like looking back, like in retrospect, looking at those time periods, do you think that was part of his strategy of like, you know, making someone kind of yearn for that affection and that, you know, like approval? Or do you think that he did that by default and then it kind of, he tried to use that to his advantage later on?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think he, looking back and trying to read, I mean, obviously as a grown adult, I don't know. I mean, because I feel like there was a lot of kids that were getting called in his office for dumb things.
Yeah.
And I, maybe it was his way to kind of fill out the different kids and how they were going to react. And then I just remember like obviously wanting to please him. And loving the ministry too. And then what can I do? Volunteer, you know, I was volunteering for stuff. But I remember the first time was one of my dad's relatives had passed away. And I remember it was like on a Saturday because we were all home and seeing my dad upset and crying, which you don't always see your dad cry and upset. So. And then I went to, we lived around the corner from the church at this time. So I had to go to the store and I remember passing the church and I saw his car in the parking lot. So I'm like, oh, he's there. And I'm like, I just want to tell him, like, to pray for my dad because he lost a family member and seeing my dad upset. So I went, remember seeing his car, I went in to his office. And I guess he was just preparing for Sunday. And I told him. And that was the first time that I remember where he hugged me, which you don't obviously you don't do that hug like that. But I didn't, it shocked me at first, but then I didn't. I'm like, he's just comforting me because my dad, he knew I was upset because my dad was upset.
Right.
And so, but he also said, don't tell anybody.
Christina's family and the Stroh family became very close very quickly. Christina even eventually ended up going on a vacation with the Stroh family for 2 weeks.
Obviously, at the time, I didn't think anything weird. But when I tell people now, or actually mentioned it to my daughters, and they're like, why would you go on a vacation with your youth pastor? And I'm like, right. I don't know. And they're like, that's weird, Mom. We would never.
Right.
I'm like, And they're like, and I'm just looking at them. They're like, Mom, you don't just go on a vacation with your youth pastor. And I said, but I did for 2 weeks. We went to his family for 1 week and then we went to his wife's family for 1 week.
That is crazy.
I remember though, I think, cause I'm like, how are you going to pitch this? I remember it coming up like, oh, you want to go on vacation with us? But it was like, how are you going to pitch this? I think he said he was going to pitch it to Cash Retriever. And I don't know if he ever did or if he had to, but like they were helping me because I was bad. I was rebellious. That was how they pitched me going on vacation with them.
At the point of going on this vacation, nothing had happened between Christina and Stroff yet, but she remembers being confronted by Stroff's wife, asking her if there was something going on between her and her husband.
And I think that's when his wife may have started to notice.
Wow, that early on.
Because I think she had asked me, we were like at a baseball game and she approached me and said, I don't remember exactly what she had said, but I remember thinking, I came all the way out here with you guys. Why are you accusing me? Because at that point, nothing had happened. So that's why right. It was kind of like upsetting. Like, why? And then she was like, okay, I'm sorry. So she was just like, you're spending too much time with him or, you know. And I was like, okay, but I'm on a family vacation with you guys. Like, I don't know where
right. I'm supposed to go. Agreed for me to come too. And we're here. And so
I remember going back down in the baseball game and sitting down and just not talking the rest of the game. I was just like, and then he was like, what's wrong? And I was like, nothing. He's like, what is wrong? And I'm like, you need to talk to your wife. Like, it was just like, I was upset and I was stuck. Like thousands of miles away, you know? Yeah. So I don't know what he said to her. I do remember on the way home, we were like in a 15 passenger van. So he wasn't driving. Someone else was driving. We were in the back seat and it was his wife and then him in the middle and then me on the other end of him, like in one of the seats. And I was just like sitting there. I was just kind of upset. Like, okay, how many more days left? And then right. I remember him actually making out, like kissing his wife in the car, which was awkward, even as a teenager, right? It's like, oh my gosh. But then at the same time, and then he grabbed my hand though. So I was kind of like, this is really... what is going on? So he's kissing her and then he grabbed my hand.
Right.
And I didn't know what to think at that point. And obviously I wasn't home, you know. And I just didn't say anything. Like I just kept quiet. So I'm like, okay, she obviously did have a feeling.
Yeah.
You know, before that it didn't. I mean, we had hugged and I didn't ever look at that as anything. And then, so I guess that's when it started. So he held my hand in the car.
Once they got back into the swing of the normal school year, Christina recalls how their relationship progressed over the next couple of months, with much of the activity between her and Stroff taking place within the sports closet at North Valley Baptist Church.
Anybody who went to school there knows where the sports closet is. So that's where all this, the basketballs, everything was kept in there. It was just a little under the stairs closet. And I would actually go in there. He would have me do either clean up in there or do some stats for him from the previous game. Even though I wasn't really good in math. I think it was just kind of like made up work. Like, but then he would come in there. When I was in there. So I do remember. So we were hugging a lot. That was how it started. Every time we'd see or we were by ourselves, it was always, there was the hug. And then that one time in the sports closet, we were hugging. And then that's when he kissed me. And I freaked out again. And then he was like, sorry, don't tell anyone. That will never happen again. And I remember in English class, I went back up to class because this was during school. So I don't know if I was his teacher's aide or I was a teacher's aide during that period. I don't remember why. I must have been because that's the time I would be there all the time. So the next class was like English and we were actually reading the Scarlet Letter. And I remember that. And I'm like, I'm going to die. I'm reading this and I just kissed my youth pastor and I'm gonna die. Like physically, I just, but then everything was just, I don't know. He didn't seem concerned. He said again, it's not going to happen again. And again, my generation back then, I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything to my best friend. I didn't say anything to my parents. I didn't say anything to anybody.
Now, I do want to give a listener discretion warning here. I know that there's a trigger warning at the top of the show, but part of the story involving this aspect of abuse does involve a miscarriage. And I know that child loss is a heavy topic. And this is frankly one of the most disturbing elements of this specific story. So I do want to just say listener discretion is advised at this segment of the episode for this clip. But it is one of the harrowing elements of Christina's story. And I think it really sheds light on what a monster Strofe really was.
I mean, as far as the holding hands and hugging, I was 16. And then all through my junior year, going into my senior year, we were kissing. It became more physical, and it's hard to explain because I hate using certain words and stuff. But it was definitely everything, anything you could do before intercourse, I guess,
right,
without being blunt. You know, we went my junior year, we went on a college tour. We're in the college tour again. And so while this is all going on, I'm still very close to his wife and his family. I'm babysitting, you know, for their son. She would have me come over and say, can you make your enchiladas? Teach me how to make your enchiladas. I was driving her places because she didn't have a driver's license. I had my license at 16. So I would take her to the store or whatever she needed. I was close to them, which sounds, I don't know, weird or bad. I really I liked her, you know, and I
know.
She would confide in me certain things about their marriage. And as a teenager, like, I didn't know what to say, you know. There was very, on our senior trip, you know, we went skiing and I feel bad. You know, she ended up having a miscarriage. But I remember her coming like upstairs because the girls were upstairs and all the boys were downstairs. And I remember her coming upstairs and like sitting, she was sitting on my bed and I woke up and I was like, what's wrong? And she's like, I think I'm having a miscarriage. So I was like, you know, I don't, do you want me to stay with you? What do you want? You know, no. I'm like, did you tell him yet? She's like, no, not yet. It was just like, it was weird. I don't know how to explain the relationship, but.
Well, it's so compartmentalized, you know, like there's that relationship where it's like, oh, I'm close friends with their family. And then you've also got this other situation where, again, you're sitting there like, I don't even think you'd at that point know how to even categorize what's happening in secret. Like what is this? Like how does this fit into this? And like you said, like you didn't sound like the type that was trying to rock the boat or like make something weird that wasn't weird. And like, you know, and so, I mean, it's just hard to like process that stuff. You know, it's hard to identify like how was this okay? Or like, how did I get convinced by someone like that this was okay? You know, and that's not faulting you. Like that speaks to the the people who do this stuff, like it really is like this very methodical kind of deceitfulness. Like, I mean, that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah. And so on that senior trip, she ended up staying back behind that day. And I said, I'll stay home with you. I honestly wanted, and she's like, no, it's okay. I'll be okay. And so we all went, but again, like you, like he knew that was happening to her. But then I remember we were on the shuttle, and for some reason it was just me and him. And then he was kissed, you know, we started kissing. But I know in the back of my head, I'm like, what is going on?
Right.
She's at home. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Unfortunately, I believe she did lose the baby, but it was like, looking back, it obviously didn't faze him.
Yeah. It was another opportunity to be alone for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And how we hid it from my other classmates and stuff, I don't know. I don't know.
After Christina graduated from high school, she attended Bible college, and she really talked about how that affected the dynamic between her and Strofe.
So I'm 17, almost my whole senior year, and then I turned 18 in April. And again, up until that point, you know, he was doing a lot of stuff to me. I don't know how graphic. I just want to be careful. But anyways,
no, I mean, it's again, totally up to you. I think if people get the gist though, the relationship.
Yeah. So again, he was doing everything to me that you can do without intercourse. So I don't know if it was purposely on his part because I wasn't 18 yet. But after I turned 18, there was one time he got a hotel for us, and I remember meeting him in the parking lot, and I chickened out. I was like, I can't do this. I'm not ready. And he's like, he had already got the room.
Right.
But I chickened out, and he was like, it's okay. You don't have to. So we didn't do it that time. But that was in the summer of my senior year.
Right.
So I went to college in the fall. I went to Hiles Anderson, and you know, we're always taught if you're not going to at least do 1 year of Bible college. So I was like, okay, I could do the 1 year, even though I didn't want to go at that time. That was the only college. There was no Golden State or West Coast or anything. And I was very, very homesick. And most of my friends that I hung out were a year below me. So even though there was a lot of kids from our church there, I knew a lot of kids. There weren't the ones that I hung out with. So I was really lonely. Went to college. He wrote me. I had a stack of letters, at least 50, probably more, that he would write to me in college. He would send me gifts. I had jewelry. I had clothing. I had a lot. We didn't have cell phones or anything, so I don't have any text messages or anything like that. But he would call me, you know, Hiles, you have that phone in the middle, you know. So that probably made me even more homesick because he was still staying in contact with me. And then I came home for Thanksgiving, even though it was a short break. And I, that was the first time I went to his house. And I don't know why. I think it was just like, come over, I have to get something. This was in the middle of the day. So his wife was at work. It was the day I was leaving. So I think my flight was in the afternoon. So anyways, I ended up going to his house and we were making out. And then that was the first time we had intercourse. So it was, Thanksgiving break. And then I left that day. I went back to college.
What was going through your mind, like on the plane flying back to college? Was it like, did it just kind of get compartmentalized back, or was it something where it was like what?
It was probably, I don't know. It was devastating, I guess, because I'm like, what am I doing? I felt like he finally just like got what he wanted, and it was so fast. And it was just like, okay, come on, we got to go, you know.
Right.
It wasn't, obviously, when you're in love with your, like with my husband and stuff. It was just, it was just quick and like, all right, let's go.
Right.
And I think at that point, he probably felt like I hadn't said anything before. Why would I say anything now?
Right.
And, you know, he did always say he loved me. I never felt like he was going to, like, he never said I was going to leave my wife, or I don't even think I wanted that, because I did care for her, you know, but, it was just weird going back to school and then having to just deal with that by myself.
Right.
Because again, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't have anyone to talk to. I didn't tell anybody.
Right.
And so I came home for Christmas and I didn't go back. I ended up just staying one semester. So then obviously after that, then it was just sex all the time. Like anytime he would call. Obviously I'm not in school, so it's not as easy for me to go. So we would meet different places. We did end up going back to the hotel. I felt there was one time where I felt like something else is going on, because I felt like he wasn't giving me the attention like he was. And I remember I literally had a stack of letters that he wrote to me in college. I remember going to his office and saying, what about all these letters? What about all these things you said to me and you wrote to me? Like, do I not mean anything anymore? And I literally had given him everything at that point,
right?
All of me. And I remember leaving and he said whatever he had to say to make me feel like, no, I still care, whatever, which is just so stupid now, you know, thinking about it. And then I left his office and I forgot the letters. And I remember calling him right away and said, hey, I need to come back and get my letters. And he said, I threw them away. So that was devastating to me later on, because when it all came out, I had no proof.
A few months after all this happened with Strofe, Christina remembers the moment that she was found out by her parents.
It was a Sunday. And me and my brother had gone out in between church. You know, we have Sunday morning and Sunday night service. So it was a Sunday afternoon and I got home and my parents said, we're going to the store. We want you to come. And I was like, no, I don't want to come. And she's like, no, just come. And I'm like, all right. So we went a couple blocks. My parents pulled over. My mom turned around and she said, we know what happened between you and Stro. And I said, what? And she goes, we know what's been going on. And I'm still like, what are you talking about?
Right.
And then she was like, Pastor Trevor came to our house and he told us what was going on. And I was just stunned. I didn't know what to say. I was just looking at my mom. And she said, there's another girl involved and she got pregnant. And I was like, and I had no idea who the other girl was. I And I was like, okay. And then she was like, it didn't hit me. All I remember too is saying, Pastor Trevor said, you need to go to church tonight and just sit there. And he's going to announce that Strope is leaving, but he wants you to go to church. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to church. And she's like, you have to go. And I'm like, I'm not going. And she's like, well, Pastor Trevor said, you have to go, because if you don't go, they'll know who it is. And if you go, he said, nobody won't find out it's you.
Right.
Which I'm like, obviously that's impossible. Our church was pretty big, but not that big, you know?
Right.
So I had to go and sit in church. And I have no idea what the message was about. And then at the end of the service, he said that, you know, Strope had to leave. I don't even remember what he said, because I was just like, what the heck is going on? I mean, I didn't get to talk to him. I just had no idea what was going to happen. And then I remember walking out of church, and there was a couple of my friends right outside. And I walked by, obviously, the other victim, which at that time I didn't know it was her. And so then that's how it came out. And then I remember that was like on a Sunday and Monday. So I still hadn't talked to him. And I remember going to his house, and he was already packing. They were like packing his stuff
to move out of state.
Yeah. Well, it was Pastor Trevor was on vacation. So, and his wife, Mrs. Strope, was on vacation with Pastor Trevor. They were actually seeing his family. I don't know why he didn't go. For some reason, Strope didn't go on that vacation. So she was already gone. And when it came back, so the other family called, had found out that their daughter was pregnant. And, they contacted, you know, Pastor Trevor. So talking to the other victim, what happened is he had to call Pastor Trevor from their house and tell him what happened. So when he was telling him that she was pregnant, I believe Pastor Trevor asked him, was there anybody else involved? Was there any other person?
I'm going to get you back into today's episode in just a moment, but first I want to thank the sponsor that is making today's episode possible, and that sponsor is Factor. Factor creates no prep, no mess meals. You can meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, no matter how many podcasts you're recording, going up and down the stairs, trying to take meetings, whatever you're doing, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. And I can say this from experience. They were kind enough to send me a couple of meals for this week, and I enjoyed one just shortly before reading this ad, and it is amazing. And with 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, you'll always have new flavors to explore. You can make your day delicious from breakfast to dessert and stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. And these aren't meals that skimp on quality either. You've got things like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon, and so much more. So if you want to try it, go head over to factormeals.com/preacherboys50 and use code preacherboys50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code PreacherBoys50 at factormeals.com/PreacherBoys50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Go check out Factor, and now check out the rest of this episode.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When he told that, Pastor True about me.
Not long after her parents confronted Christina about this relationship, she found herself in a meeting with Jack Treiber, Kim, Mike Strofe, and their respective families. Now, what I don't think is mentioned in this clip, and what is most disturbing about this, is the hotel that Jack Treiber agreed to meet Christina and all of the people involved in was actually the same hotel that Strofe had taken Christina to abuse her in the past. And I want to make clear as well that this meeting did not happen in a hotel conference room. They had just literally rented a room within the hotel to have this conversation. It was a typical hotel room with Treiber and all of the people involved. It is interesting that they chose not to have this conversation on church property.
I don't know if it was 1 or 2 weeks after it came out, we had a meeting and it was me and my parents, the other victim and her parents, Pastor Treiber and the board of deacon, the head deacon. And we met in a hotel. I don't know why it was a hotel and not the church office.
Right.
And then it was Strofe and his wife.
So, and no law enforcement was contacted at this point.
No.
Right.
So we had a meeting. I talked to the other victim. We kind of wrote down. I thought Pastor Treiber wanted to know everything, right? And so I remember I had a notebook. I wrote down like the first time we kissed. I just remember telling him. I don't know if I ever got into detail, because obviously it's still hard for me to say what physically went on. But I know in that meeting they all knew what happened. And then the other victim told her story. There was actually days that he slept with both of us on the same day. And then I just remember crying in the meeting. I remember apologizing. I was telling someone this and they're like, why were you the one apologizing? Right. And I'm like, and I didn't think about it till like early now. Like, yeah, why was I the one? I was 16, 17, you know. And so I just remember being the one apologizing. And I'm pretty sure the other victim was. I don't remember if he was. He did. I remember, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but I remember when he came back to church and they let him get up and apologize to the church. I remember thinking, he's not sorry. Like, I remember looking at him thinking he's not sorry. Because obviously when it first came out, I still was like, what's going on?
Yeah.
I remember him calling the house saying, you guys aren't going to press charges. Of course, I was like, no, I was in love with him. And everything was happening so fast, you know, so yeah. I was just kind of like, no, I hadn't even thought of that. I was like, I don't think so. Like, I was like, I don't know. I mean, I honestly wasn't, I wouldn't even know. Like, I didn't know. I was just like, I don't think so. And so in that meeting, again, like she told her side and I told mine, but I remember leaving the meeting in the elevator thinking, what was that point?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't leave the meeting thinking everything's going to be taken care of. I remember leaving, like, I just spilled my guts out and nothing was said or done. Like, it was just like, okay, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
And the victim was shipped off, you know, to have her baby.
And Strofe was shipped off to go to a different place. Yeah.
Yes. So we didn't see him again. Pastor Treiber never talked to me about it after that. They never said, do you need counseling? It was just, you keep coming to church. Nobody will know. You just be faithful. Looking back, you know, obviously people say, why didn't your parents press charges? I think my parents honestly felt like Pastor Treiber made it like, I'm going to take care of your daughter. You're just keep coming to church. He's not going to come back. We're getting rid of him. We don't have to worry about that.
And he promised that to both of you that he wouldn't be back at the property.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I remember the other victim. It was just like, don't press charges because you're going to, if we did, we would be destroying a family.
Right.
If we don't, we're helping a family.
Hmm.
So, but I feel like, okay, you're helping their family. What about our family?
Right.
What about the other victim's family? We didn't get any help. Like, it was just like, it happened and then that was it. Yeah. He goes away. You guys just keep coming to church. And then just having to feel like, okay, whatever you say, I'll do, because you want to get back on good graces with them. And then this being one of his relatives, that even made it even harder, because this was the pastor's brother-in-law.
Right.
So you feel really guilty. I mean, I did. Okay. Yeah. Not, it wasn't just somebody. It was the pastor's brother-in-law. There was women that did, I mean, going to church there, it was definitely hard. You know, there was women that just gave me nasty looks. Like, I know they knew it was me. Why they were giving me the dirty looks, I don't know.
The next clip I want to share is not necessarily essential to this story, but I do think it's a really beautiful part of that original interview that I want to make sure I included. Now, over the last couple of years, I've gotten to know both Christina and her husband, Mike, very well, and I've had a lot of conversations. And I really thought this part of Christina's story was really beautiful in how Mike approached listening to Christina's story and how he reacted. And I want to make sure I included it in this episode.
And then I met my husband probably a year later. He was in the military. So he wasn't from there. He didn't grow up in church. He was a new Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was very cute. So right. We met and we started dating. But I remember on our second date, I felt like I needed to tell him what happened. One, because I felt like somebody in the church was going to tell him. Because they probably felt like we need to warn this guy, you know? So I'm like, I'm just going to tell him, because if he wants to still date me, he'll know everything about me. Hmm. And if he doesn't, then I don't want to get too far in the relationship and then him find out. Like, I don't know. I just felt like I needed to tell him. So I did. I told him like on our second date, I said, I need to tell you something. And he just listened. He was super nice. And then he dropped me off and I wasn't sure if I was going to hear from him again, if it was going to be over. And then the next day, I got this huge bouquet of flowers and he just said, thank you for sharing your story. And we talked about it later and he said, I went home and it was emotional for him to hear it. So I said, okay, he still wants to date me, you know, so that was a blessing. We ended up getting married like a year later after that. And Pastor Trewer did marry us. There was restrictions like on the wedding. We were only allowed like 100 people. I did ask him, am I allowed to wear white? You know, because obviously he knew I wasn't pure. So he allowed that. And I was, so again, even getting married, I felt like we were still having to conditions, right, on what happened in the past that we were having to meet.
Now, up until this point in the story, it seems like Christina is really getting to experience freedom from this situation. Strofe is in a different location. Her and her husband, as she'll say in this clip, are expecting a child, and things seem to be moving in a very positive direction. But then something happened that quickly brought all of these past situations back to the forefront of Christina's mind. This, of course, is when Jack Trewer reached out and said that Mike Strofe would be returning to North Valley Baptist Church.
I got pregnant with our first son right away. And I remember the reason why this is important, because I remember the day I found out I was pregnant. I was super excited. It was a Wednesday. I got a phone call from Tasha's secretary, and he said, Pastor Truber wants to meet with you and Mike after the service tonight. And I said, okay. And I had no idea what it was. It didn't even really bother me. Like, I wasn't nervous. I was just like, I was just super excited about finding out I was pregnant. So after church, my husband and I went in his office, and we told him that we were expecting, and he was like, oh, congratulations. And then he said, I just want to let you know that my brother-in-law messed up again in Colorado. And he's like, I don't know if he knew any details. He just said, I don't want to get into details, or I don't know what all happened, but I just want to let you guys know he will never be allowed to come back to church here again. And we just said, oh, okay. You know, and he's like, I just want to give you that assurance that he's not going to come back. So,
and this was what year?
This was 92. I think my son was born in 92. Was he born in 92 or 93? I think he was born in 93. So I found out in January of 93 that I was pregnant. So I believe it was 93.
Okay.
I'll have to make sure. But yeah. So he told us. So, and honestly, I was super excited about being pregnant. I was married to a great guy. So I really didn't care. Like, it was like, okay, great. But I also remember feeling, okay, Pastor Truber finally believes me. Like, I felt like he finally knew, like, okay, it wasn't the girls. Because before, I just felt like he thought me and the other victim were, like, we threw ourselves on him, or we were, you know, just that type of girl. And I felt like him telling us that he was, I felt like, okay, he finally believes us, that it wasn't all of us. Like, that he realizes that his brother-in-law has a problem.
Right.
So that's how I took it. And then it was just a blessing. So obviously, being married to a military guy, we were transferred. So we got transferred. And when I found out that he moved back, I wasn't there. And then the other victim wasn't there either. But both of our parents were still there. Both of our parents were still going to church there. So even though me and the victim weren't there, I don't know if Pastor Truber just thought, well, their girls aren't here, so it's okay. He never asked my parents about it. My parents had no idea that he was coming back. In fact, when he got voted back in, my parents, you know how they stand in front of the church and they say, you know, all in favor, say aye, all nay. Right. Okay, so my parents and the victim's parents were not in the auditorium when that vote was taken. My parents, I had mentioned, worked on the bus route. So during invitation, they would always leave early. And the other victim's mom was on a bus route. So they would leave during invitation to go get their bus kids. And so that was odd too, that they would do the vote in the morning service. Usually right. It was in the night services. But I mean, so I feel like, and I don't want to speak for him, but I feel like it was intentional, because he knew that our parents weren't in there when they voted him back in. And then the fact that my parents had no say in it. Like, obviously, I guess it's his church and he could, but they weren't even told, hey, he's coming back. Is that okay? Hmm. Like, they never talked about it. It was just like, he's coming back and that's it. And I know I've heard from other deacons, of course, this is secondhand, but like, it was just told, he's coming back and that's it. It was never like, the deacons didn't even get to discuss it. It wasn't like, well, I don't think this is a good idea. It was like, my wife misses her sister, and they're coming back.
I think anybody who's listened to the clips I've shared on this episode can understand how many issues there really are with how Jack Treiber, North Valley, and certainly Mike Strofe handled this situation of abuse. But I think there's also probably many listening who go, with all the people who knew about this, why did no one speak up? And some also may be wondering why Christina decided now is the time to speak up. I think Christina really hits the nail on the head in this last segment I wanted to share with you, where she talks about how bold people got talking about how great North Valley is and how they never covered up anything and how they were always above board. And Christina really expresses in this clip that she knew the truth firsthand, and the truth was anything but what was being shared from the pulpit at North Valley. And you actually said something off mic that I thought was interesting, and something that Treiber said, which was really placed a lot of guilt on you guys if you did speak out about it. Can you talk about that a little bit and kind of the priority of like who needed to be protected?
Yeah. I just I think my parents, again, like going back to why didn't they press charges? Because I think he had a way of making them feel like it's okay, I'm going to take care of this. And by kept saying no one's going to find out, and then just acting like everything's okay, just act normal. And so I think my parents just felt like, okay, everything's going to be okay. He promised he's going to take care of it. And then, because when I got married, it was only 2 years after, so it's still pretty new. So then I think finally saying he's never coming back is when we all felt like, okay, great. We don't have to worry about it. I won't talk about, we won't bring it up. I won't talk about it. There's no need to. He's not going to come back. But then, he comes back and it brings it all up again. Yeah. And people that were still in the church that knew about it didn't understand. But nobody had a voice. And obviously back then I was newly married. I had a young family. And I was like, I'm not going to even, I wasn't strong enough, I guess, to just say, make a big deal about it and be like, and also the other victim too, was just, we were just trying to stay above our, again, we hadn't fully dealt with it. We never talked about it. No counseling. So I'm like, I don't know. I think that's why victims wait until they're a lot older. Just
right. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot to process, and it is religious, the religious angle to it as well. Like, you're not only speaking out against a abuser, you're not only speaking out against like maybe some family that's still, like, you're speaking out against a church, and like,
and your fear of something bad's going to happen to me if I say anything. Right. I mean, I remember, because my husband didn't grow up in church, I remember saying, we traveled one time on a Sunday, and I'm like, hun, we can't drive on a Sunday. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, we're supposed to be in church. He's like, what? And I'm like, something's going to happen to us. We're going to get in a car accident. I just know something. He's like, Christina, you're being ridiculous. I'm like, no. And honestly, there's still a part of me that I'm thinking about talking to you. I'm like, something's going to happen. I got a toothache or something like 2 weeks ago. I'm like, this is God telling me not to say anything. Or, right. Your mind just goes like, something's going to happen, And if something happens after this is shown, it's like, oh, I already know they're gonna say, see, that happened to her because she decided to tell her story. And that's not, it's just part of life, stuff happens because of life. But that's how you think, and that's how we thought,
like, we're programmed to think that way,
and as long as they were being nice to us, and you felt like, okay, they're letting me go to church here. They didn't kick me out. So I'm not going to say anything because that's how you feel. Like, and, you know, that was another reason I'm sharing too, is because I feel like a lot of some people are getting bold in some of their statements. And I'm like, you're getting bold because me and the victim haven't said anything. But obviously, right, if you feel bold enough to say that you've never covered up anything, then maybe I should still tell my story.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know when they say that if they didn't cover it up, but by him coming back and not allowing the new church members or the members that were there even have a say in it or know the truth, then you are covering it up.
Thank you so much for listening to these clips from my conversation with Christina Cheatham. Again, I look forward at some point to sit down and re-record a full conversation with Christina so you can hear from her perspective and get to know, as I have, just how incredible, brave, and strong she truly is. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really look forward to sharing any future developments relating to this story. And I truly hope that for those who have been defending North Valley or defending Jack Treiber or have, even worse, been condemning the victims in this case, that you've truly heard what was said on this episode, and it will make an impact not only on you, but it will impact the way that future victims are treated. And beyond that, and directly connected to that, I hope that those who have been victimized will find the courage and the strength to speak up the way Christina and Kim so bravely have through this case. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I will see you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes and don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle at Preacher Boys Doc.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save.